asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances.
So if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org.
In recent weeks, we've really focused on some ways that listeners can boost their income. So whether that's through starting your own side business and growing your network like Hala talked about, or when we talked with local realtor Alan about diving into investing in real estate, well, what better way to test the waters? While you are away, your home could also earn extra income.
That's right. Your empty space could be an Airbnb while you're traveling, because that's all you need to become an Airbnb host. It's a lot easier than you think, and you don't need to Airbnb your entire house. You could just host your extra spare room. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Supercharge your work decks with AI-powered Canva presentations. All you do is start with a prompt. You describe your presentation in a few words, and Canva presentations will generate captivating slides that you can then customize in seconds.
Canva presentations are designed for every workplace and every department. Whether you work in sales, marketing, HR, ops, and more, Canva presentations can generate any deck you want for work. Sales decks, marketing presentations, onboarding plans, you name it. Any department can save time on any presentation with AI.
Generate slides in seconds with Canva presentations at canva.com. Designed for work.
Welcome to How to Money. I'm Joel.
And I am Matt.
And today we're talking cheap, ugly homes, scam susceptibility, and timeshares making a comeback.
Timeshares, man, this makes me think. So a few weeks ago, we had the whole family down for fall break at Disney, and they got those tents set up all over the place. And I'm pretty sure, is it Disney Vacation Club?
Uh huh.
I'm sure. Did you not sidle up to one of those guys and get like a free cup or T-shirt or something like that while you were down there?
No,
this
I wasn't
past
interested.
Summer?
No, no. But I think
wasn't going to give them the time of day to even understand whether or not it was a timeshare or not.
Yeah.
But I'm pretty sure.
Probably is, yeah. And Matt, speaking of vacations, Emily and I, we just got back from a real quick anniversary trip. We went to New York City and just...
You had a good time, right?
Yeah, we had a great time. We saw a couple shows on Broadway. We tried this website called BroadwayRoulette.com, and it is what you think it is. it is like taking a chance on what show you're actually going to see. Instead of handpicking it, you're going to get a discount by kind of taking whatever comes your way, and you can cross off actually a few names of shows that you're like, yeah, definitely don't want to see that one, which is nice. And so we were like, all right, we're going to give this a shot. This sounds kind of like fun. I also kind of like the randomness of not knowing until we got the show. And we were like, oh man, that's actually not a show we're terribly
what'd y'all get?
Stoked to see. And by the way, I heard about this website from somebody who writes for our site, Britt. And so no shade on Britt, but like we ended up getting this show about Neil Diamond's life. And I'm like, honestly, I don't know what people see in that
had
guy.
Had it been like a Hootie and Blowfish musical, you would have been all for it, right?
I would have eaten it up.
But not Neil Diamond,
no.
I guess, I assume.
Fortunately, we were, by the way, the youngest people in that theater by substantial margin. So people in their late 30s, not Neil Diamond people in their 70s, most definitely Neil Diamond people, or at least a lot of them. But am I frugal or cheap, I guess, for having tried this out?
No, you got to give it a go.
You think so? Okay.
No, absolutely. I assume it comes at a massive discount, right?
Yes.
Okay. It's not like they're just choosing it for you. And you still have to pay.
No, they're basically giving you the leftovers at a reduced price, which is nice. But I will say, looking it up later, I didn't get as much of a reduced price as I hoped.
Oh, really? What was the discount?
Well, like it depends on the show and the day and all that kind of stuff. But there were better shows that I was excited to see that Emily and I actually paid full price for.
Right.
It was like an extra $20 or something like that. And so, in retrospect, I think I would have
$20 savings.
I would have looked longer and harder. Yeah. I mean, again, it depends on the show and all that kind of stuff. So,
how much did you save though when you looked it up?
Well, versus that actual show, I don't think we saved very much.
Oh,
yeah, because it's one of the shows that still has tickets.
And then you're like, well, dang, I spent all that time having paid the same amount that all these other folks paid.
Yeah.
But who are obviously excited to see it. But, well,
I mean, those ticket prices are dynamic, so it's hard to say how much you save.
Gotcha.
But and maybe you end up getting the show of your dreams that typically costs way more money. But it was a really fun exercise, and I'm always it's a fun story to be able to tell. Like, we're literally in there with all these awesome old folks, listening to all these Neil Diamond songs. We don't know what they are.
Okay.
Except for Sweet Caroline. I know that one.
Well, is that...
That's the only one.
I don't think I even knew that was Neil Diamond, personally. Well, I'm glad y'all tried it, because, if you have the opportunity to potentially save, it would be different if y'all lived in New York and you'd seen a bunch of different shows, and you're like, I'm not going to take the chance of going to see something that I've already seen. But for you, it was a chance to see pretty much... I mean, y'all seen a few shows, but
not many. They were all new to us, basically.
Exactly.
And so we were like, all right, cool. As long as we don't get this, 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 and this. But if we had could have been able to cross off just a few more, then we would have found something that we were happy with.
Would that have been your sixth one?
That would have definitely
been. Would it really?
Yeah. So, and in retrospect, we should have left others on. But it's okay. It's okay. And we got to go see some other really, really great shows while we were there, too. We had the best time, and it was a pretty inexpensive, quick getaway, especially because we used points to get there, Southwest points. But just goes to show that sometimes it's worth the gamble, and other times, you see Neil Diamond.
It's not playing roulette for it. But all right, let's keep moving, man. This is our Friday flight where we have a nice little sampling of some of the different stories that we found most interesting this week. But actually, let's go ahead and start off by updating some information from Monday's episode, the Ask How to Money episode, where we answered Kyle's question about getting the IRA match from Robinhood.
Oh, yeah.
It turns out Robinhood now has some competition in the IRA matching space. SoFi, this is something that they have recently announced that they're going to do as well.
One of the bigger fintech companies out there, SoFi. Yeah,
yeah.
I believe they have the stadium naming rights to...
Do they still?
Sacramento or Los Angeles?
Something like that. Yeah. But listener Hannah, she actually emailed us and was just like, hey, by the way, I heard y'all talk about Robinhood. SoFi is doing this now as well.
It's just launched, yeah.
Yeah, it's brand new. But they currently say that the offer ends at the end of the year, which makes it not all that helpful in reality because of the ongoing nature of the match at Robinhood. Like, that is what makes it appealing.
Well, let's be honest.
As opposed to just I would not hop over there just to get a match on your contributions to the end of the year.
For 2023. Well, especially since we're hoping that
not very much money.
A lot of our listeners have already made a lot of their contributions to the Roth IRA already. So if they've already come close to maxing it out or whatever, then you've already made the contributions for the year. You can't go back and do it with somebody else.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, SoFi, they could certainly choose to keep this as an ongoing benefit, an ongoing feature in the coming years if this launch is successful. But one of the things that I guess where SoFi stands maybe a little bit taller than Robinhood, they've actually instituted just a 2-year vesting period, which is better than the 5-year vesting period that comes with the Robinhood match. They also have a slightly cheaper $75 outgoing transfer fee.
Still
Robinhood's Robinhood's is $100, but I also noticed too that SoFi, they are excluding any money that you transfer or any money that you roll over to an IRA, whereas Robinhood, there is no cap, so you are still getting match on dollars that you transfer or roll over. That's one of the only reasons I'm actually considering going with it, because of I'm like, oh my gosh, it's certainly healthier than just ongoing contributions moving forward. But either way, the concept of an IRA match is still sort of in its infancy with some of these fintech players. It's functioning more as a loss leader, but if you're savvy, you might just be able to use it to your advantage, in particular if you do not have access to a match where you have an outside company helping you out with your retirement. Like us, we don't have anybody else helping us to retire, Joel.
That's right. No, we're doing it ourselves. But just like we talked about on Monday, there's some perks here, but there's some downsides, right? And you have to know what those downsides are. That 5-year vesting period is one of the toughest things to stomach about the Robinhood gift, right? That Robinhood match. And SoFi dials that back by a few years, but 2 years is still a long time. And so you have to know the gory details of these plans before you just say, sign me up, let me get the match. Although I think it's cool, and I love that this is happening. just be aware of those specifics. Read through all the FAQs. Make sure you know what you're getting into.
Got to know what all the catches are.
Yeah. And Matt, given our conversation with Dr. Twenge about, this was a few weeks ago, about the generational differences that exist, especially we honed in on personal finance and kind of money and the differences between generations on those fronts. Well, we thought this story deserved a mention because defying the narrative yet again, millennials are in fact crushing it when it comes to saving for retirement. There were new numbers that came out.
We're number one.
Yeah, we are. Take that, boomers and Gen Xers. Well, these new numbers from Vanguard show that millennials as a generation have been saving really, really well for retirement. And this just jives with everything that Dr. Twenge was telling us on that episode. Despite the popular refrain and the headlines from across the
popular narrative,
the newsosphere, like millennials are on track to replace 60% of their salary in those post-retirement years based on what they've been able to save and rack up so far in their IRAs and their 401ks and those other like tax advantaged accounts. That's just a pretty sizable leap over the generations that have gone before. This is like, it goes to show that there's a whole lot of momentum essentially that millennials have been able to grab onto when it comes to making progress with their finances, and their retirement account balances are kind of showing the reality of how much they've been able to achieve.
Sure. So I think one of the cooler aspects of this story and some of the research is the stat that the new automation features like auto enrollment, like that is a big part of why millennials have more dollars in their retirement accounts, in their tax advantage retirement accounts. So yes, millennials are doing better financially than the media lets on, but behavioral finance techniques, it seems to be making a massive difference. So for instance, 60% of companies that use Vanguard, well, they auto enroll new employees into the 401k offerings that they have. That's currently. 15 years ago, it was just 10%. So you're comparing 60% today that who are auto enrolled versus 10 15 years ago. So there have certainly been a lot of positive changes on the investing front over the past couple of decades. I'm looking at just lower costs, like the lower expense ratios on different fees. And just, we talked about this with Paul Merriman, the invention of target date funds, where
game
you
changer.
Don't have to mess with it at all. But making investing the default is one of the best advances that we've seen.
It's so basic, yet it's having obviously such a positive impact.
And when it comes to like product managers or policy, like folks who manage benefits with companies, the ability to take advantage of our desire to maintain the status quo, right? Yeah. Like that's the status quo bias where it's like, well, I've always been investing, so I guess I'll just go ahead and continue to invest,
right,
as opposed to making the active decision of, should I start investing now? It's like, well, no, you don't even have to ask yourself that question anymore because you have always been investing since you were hired.
It goes to show that it doesn't always take some newfangled fancy ETF, although I'm glad targeted funds exist. Sometimes it is these like minor behavioral tweaks or just like an auto enrollment kind of thing that's going to make the big difference. It's going to do a lot of the heavy lifting. It's not because millennials are so much more disciplined than the people that went before them.
They're not more disciplined. They're not smarter.
It's because the default choice is different, right?
Absolutely.
And so I do think that's a big part of why, and much to the benefit for millennials as well. And Matt, speaking of generational differences, well, there's this a recent Deloitte survey which showed the counterintuitive reality that we're living in. And most of us, we probably think of boomers maybe as being the most susceptible to falling prey to a scam. We're just thinking, okay, well, maybe their cognitive ability has declined, late 70s, early 80s sort of thing.
Not as familiar with the technology, perhaps.
Right. They're the kind of person who's going to get the phone call or the text message or the email, and they're going to click the link. But I guess that bias is actually wrong, given this new data. It turns out that Gen Z falls for scams far more frequently than somebody in their 60s or 70s. And Gen Zers are actually three times more likely to get caught in an online scam than a baby boomer is. Why is that? Well, it's largely because they spend so much more time online.
Sure.
Right? And while scam artists have a lower batting average with Gen Zers, like they're not nabbing as many for as many attempts, they're getting way more chances. So email, social media, dating sites, e-commerce, all of those are the likely places that people are going to fall victim to a scam attempt. So I guess our advice to you is to be careful what what links you click, it's easy to think that as a savvy youngster who's been on the, you know, internet since they came out of the womb, who's been TikToking since they were like 3 and a half or something like that, that you're not going to be the one, and that these scams, well, they can't phase you, they can't get you. The truth is they are getting younger people more and more and more. I think scammers are going to where the people are. Those slightly more subtle attempts are actually working, and they're parting people from their money.
It's sort of like the chance of getting bit by a shark are astronomically low. But guess what? If you're a diver or if you're a surfer and you spend an inordinate amount of time in the ocean, chances are slightly higher that yes. You will be the one who's actually bit by a shark versus somebody who lives in Iowa.
Yeah.
Right? Like the chances of them falling prey to a shark
pretty
slim.
The chances go up precipitously. It's still unlikely that you're going to get bitten by a shark, right?
Exactly. And look out, too, for, like, a lot of different employers deploy these phishing email training emails. Or I don't know what exactly they call them. But basically, they're trying to make sure that their employees are smart. And in particular, this is a pretty consequential thing if you have an employee who clicks a link where they were scammed by an outsider, right? Like, in particular, if you have access to, like, bill pay or other financial documents or payroll, for instance, but companies are employing these outside companies to basically send out these emails to determine who needs the training. And so if you do click it, I guess you probably do need the training, but best thing to do is just to avoid it altogether in the first place.
Always look at the sender, right?
Don't look at the display name, but actually look at the stinking email.
Somebody's been sending me emails from Matt Altmix. Like, no joke. Like, they know.
Are you serious?
Yes. Like, they know.
Oh, you haven't told me this.
That we're best buds. And I get scam emails with your name on it for real. But then I look at the sender and clearly, like, what's written in the body of the email is ridiculous, too.
Oh, you got to forward those to me.
I will next time.
That is crazy.
I think, too, one of the biggest, like, the essence of every scam is to get people to act quickly. It's all about, like, hey, you got to do this. You got to do it right away. There's, like, the utility scam, which maybe they'll call your place of business and say, hey, you didn't pay your utility bill. You got to go right now and pay it or we're shutting off your power. And a business owner knows, hey, if they shut off my power, that I'm going to lose productivity, blah, 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 blah. They're willing to do whatever it takes to get that, to make sure the power stays on. But oftentimes, that is a scam. That is not how a utility company would contact you. And they wouldn't say, we're turning off your power in 20 minutes or else, right? And so, like, if
you hang up the phone, we cut the power.
Yeah. So I think
this isn't the mafia.
Right.
It's a utility company.
I think staying,
or in this case, it's a scammer.
Yeah. I think staying calm, asking for details, that goes a long way to shutting the scammer down.
That's right. Okay. So the Journal, they had an article detailing that folks these days, they really don't want to buy a fixer-upper. So I think it's all those shows on HGTV, right? It made them want the finished product to not actually do the work themselves.
Yeah.
I think there's always been some truth to this, especially when
it comes to... Can I just buy the home that Joanna did? I don't want to actually do the work.
I want the nice home as opposed to going in and doing the grunt work in order to get it done. But a lot of first-time homebuyers have a hard time seeing past just the dingy carpet and the 80s wallpaper to what the home could potentially be. But this also presents, in our opinion, just a massive opportunity for How to Money listeners out there who want to buy a home, but they just feel like it's out of reach. Why not opt for the ugly house? Because it's going to be cheaper, because you'll have less competition to deal with. Other folks aren't going to want to buy that ugly home. And then you can fix some of those things with your own elbow grease over time when you have the spare cash, the ability to get a deal on a home. I think it's often going to take just a different mindset than what it is that a lot of first-time homebuyers are, what it is that they're looking for.
Yeah, and I think you're right. You to target or to highlight specifically first-time homebuyers, that's particularly something that they're like, well, I don't know about this. I'm willing for something smaller as long as it's fully updated. But the less updated it is, the more you can increase that equity on your own. And I know, yeah, you might be moving in and the bathroom might not be to your taste or the paint color might need to be changed over time. But the more and more you make those updates, the more the value is going to increase and it's going to go, those dollars are going to flow into your pocket, not somebody else's.
Yeah.
So I think you're right. I think that's a really good thing to make people aware of. And you could even be like our friend Carl, who we've interviewed before on the show, Mr. 1500, who does live-in flips. It's not for everyone, not for the faint of heart, but it's a savvy way to grow your wealth, to live in the home while you're doing the work. And then, I don't know, maybe you sell it and move on down the road and you pocket those gains tax-free, which is what's so great about Live in Flips. But also be sure not to bite off more than you can chew. Makes me think of Money Pit, Matt, the Tom Hanks movie. Mm-hmm. It's like you definitely don't want to go overboard and be like, I'm going to tear this one down to the studs, and I've never even, you know, replaced the basic working mechanism of a toilet. So there was this article in Lifehacker about buying incredibly cheap homes via some of these government programs that exist. Some of the homes can cost as little as a dollar, which is crazy to mm-hmm. think about. But there are things that can go wrong in that instance too. A lot of these homes are in parts of the country that you might not even want to take up residence in, right? You might not want to live in. Maybe they're parts of the country where there's an exodus going on. And the renovations required can be significant. Like, we're not talking about the basics of paint and some tile. You might need like a bulldozer and a framing crew and a general contractor. And I hadn't heard much about these programs, but it potentially proves the saying about certain things being too good to be true. Hey, there's a really cheap home over here. Well, hey, it needs some fixes, but make sure also you know the scope of the work that you're getting into. It's possible to say, all right, I'm going to DIY some of this stuff. But if it's massively over your head and it turns into a money pit, you could find yourself losing financially in that scenario.
That's right. Yeah. And in particular, like the $1 homes that you can buy, like some of the different government programs, they require, like, there are strings attached, and oftentimes they require updating. We're all for people making their own decisions, but you need to make sure that you know what is going to be required of you. You don't need to basically just start following cheap old homes, which it's a rabbit trail that I totally went down and started following cheap old homes here in the States, over in Europe. They've got all these amazing, historic, beautiful homes.
Ooh, cheap Scandinavian homes.
Yeah, dude, they are so cool, and they're all on fjords.
Yep.
But it's not necessarily about just getting a good deal, because I mean, I guess that's why I was intrigued by it, because I thought, I've renovated a few homes, like I've flipped one, sold one before, but it's not like the live and flip approach would not be something that Kate would be all for. And there's just more into buying a home than just making sure that you're getting a good deal. There's a lot of additional factors,
yeah,
like we've talked about here on the show.
Yeah, but I think it's good because it can be basic stuff, but as long as you're not looking for like the perfect package, that's what everybody's looking for right now.
Oh, yeah.
And so if you're willing to zig when others are zagging, when everyone else is looking for like the perfect HGTV looking home, and you can see the ability,
the
character,
potential,
the bones, right, as they say, then I think you can stand to make some of those changes over time and financially benefit.
That's right.
All right, Matt, we got more to get to on this episode, and we're going to touch on fees, but we're also going to talk about how long you can actually keep a phone. How long is it actually going to stay updated? How long is it safe? We'll get to that and more right after this. Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So, if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. They are committed to high ethical standards and even had to pass a rigorous exam before they could become a CFP professional.
They offer financial planning and services that take a more comprehensive view of your financial and personal circumstances and are customized for your needs. Certified financial planner professionals can offer advice on a wide range of issues like reviewing your investment portfolio's allocation, handling an inheritance, rolling over a company retirement plan, building education savings, and so much more.
That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org. I'm guessing that a lot of listeners are starting to solidify their summer travel plans. We always like to get the families together, Matt, for a week
at the beach.
Every single summer, we've already got that trip to St. Simons on the calendar. Pumped for that. But sometimes those vacations get expensive. So what better way to offset some of those costs than to have your home earning some money while you're away?
That's right. Why let it sit empty when it could be earning extra income? It's the financially smart thing to do. So think it through. Maybe you've got some extra space in your home, or maybe you have an entire house to host, or maybe you're just going on vacation and your home is sitting empty. In every case, you can Airbnb it. You already have the space, so it won't be a huge adjustment.
I mean, the way I see it, if you're not using your space, you have two options. You can let it just sit there empty, or you do some optimizing and make some money off it. Really, if you think about it, you already have an Airbnb. You just need to start using it. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
If you're listening to this podcast right now and you're a small business owner, listen up. Upswell Marketing would like to remind you that when customers choose your small business, they're actually choosing you. So focus on super serving your existing customers and let Upswell handle the pipeline generation of new leads and customers. They do everything from hyper-targeting best fit prospects through campaign optimization. Upswell Marketing's unique approach includes direct mail, search engine marketing, and social media ads, and has fueled more than 10,000 small business success stories. Upswell specializes in developing customized direct response campaigns and is now offering a no-obligation free assessment of your current marketing strategies. Not to mention, new customers also receive 15% off their first order when they mention that they heard about Upswell on this podcast. For more information, visit upswellmarketing.com. That's upswellmarketing.com.
All right, we are back from the break, and it is now time for our ludicrous headline of the week. And this one is from USA Today. The headline reads, "Timeshares are making a comeback with younger Americans, and here is the appeal." Mm. Yeah, let's talk about timeshares, because new stats show that more than half of timeshare owners are now in the millennial, and not even millennials, but Gen Z generations as well, which really surprised me. And it's not just because they're inheriting them, which is definitely the case. They're actually going out there and they're buying them.
Like proactively pursuing timeshares.
Yes, I didn't realize that timeshares held the same sway for young folks, but apparently they do. But it's costing them dearly. So a lot of folks are going to tout timeshares because they've come a long ways from maybe 20, 30 years ago, because today some timeshares allow for more flexibility than they used to. You don't necessarily have to stay at the exact same place. So what they've got these different systems where you can use the points that you've accrued within a system at a bunch of different destinations around the world that they manage, but then you can use those points, you can deploy those points in other ways. You can put them towards cruises, for instance, like other excursions, even car rentals. But that being said, they are still a crappy product, and we would not encourage you to check them out.
Yeah, it sounds better, and it is better in some ways
than it
like
used
you said
to
the more flexibility.
Yeah,
but it still doesn't make them good
or
a decent thing to spend your money
they're
on.
They're just less bad today.
Right They still come with fees attached, right, including
sure
annual maintenance fees, which can run into the four figures pretty easily each and every single year. And this article, Matt, in USA Today, at the very end they sneak this sentence in: the resale market for timeshare is a buyer's market. And it's true, because while some folks are glad they made the purchase, the vast majority of people are not, because of how draining it can be on their personal finances, right? They didn't necessarily go out with the goal of buying a timeshare. Most people get talked into purchasing one, and then getting rid of that timeshare is about as easy as getting rid of your skin, right? It's impossible to do.
It's tough to shake it.
Darn near impossible. And so we're all for taking vacations. We're all for spending money on fun travel experiences, but you don't have to buy a timeshare to do that. Avoid them. And especially when you're talking about something that's basically impossible to sell, or you're going to lose your shirt and a bunch of other money inside of that shirt as you try to sell that timeshare. That is the biggest indicator, I think, that they're not worth nearly the price that they're being sold for.
Yeah, like you said, it's the ongoing fees and not knowing necessarily. I mean, we know where the fees are going to go. They're going up. There's no way that those annual fees are coming down, and you have no idea of how high those fees are going to go and what you've signed up for in the future. That's one of the worst parts about these timeshares.
And I love that the selling point is more flexibility, but guess what's even more flexibility than flexible than a timeshare?
You choosing where it is that you want to go.
Wherever you want to go. And you can use, like, guess what's even more flexible? The credit card rewards points that you earn through Chase Sapphire Preferred or Capital
Heck
One Venture
yeah.
X. You can choose hotels across the world, and they're not just certain brand hotels or anything like that.
Yeah.
Or your
timeshare network that's as vast as that.
Right. Or your hard-earned dollars and just finding the best deal on a place you want to stay. That's a much better way to go than going with the timeshare.
Yeah, everyone accepts U.S. dollars.
Right.
Let's talk about fee transparency, because the Biden administration and the state of California, they have both had their sights set on eliminating junk fees. Governor Gavin Newsom, he actually just signed a law that will make fees much more transparent moving forward. And just because of the sheer size of California, this bill is going to have ramifications across the country. Makes me think of the EU. Was it the EU who required that the iPhones have the standard USB-C charging port? And because of that, guess what? All iPhones now have that, regardless of where they're sold.
Even though they're not mandated to have them here in the United States, they were like, we're not going to manufacture
two
different...
Now we've got to do it. Exactly. Yeah, so companies have already seen the writing on the wall, and they have proactively made changes. Ticketmaster actually did this. Basically, they're no longer surprising you with their fee. Instead, they're just letting you know up front. So it's important to know here, they're not actually lowering their fees. They're just becoming more transparent. But while transparency doesn't eliminate excess fees, it actually is really good at reducing some customer frustration, where consumers now have the ability to comparison shop and they're not shocked on the back end, where it's not, where it doesn't feel like a bait and switch. You can go into these transactions more informed.
Yeah, eyes wide open. Mm-hmm. And you're right, yeah, like Ticketmaster knew they're trying to be good little boys and girls over there, because they realize that there are other actions that could be taken against them at some point in the future. And so they're like, well, let's go ahead and do this now and look like the good little boy who did the right thing. Well, but you're right, Matt. It's not changing the actual fees. It's just putting them up front and center. And so you're going to see that more and more when you're shopping with different providers online. And the truth is, fees are always going to be with us, right? Even with these attempts to make them less hidden, less difficult to spot. And there's one place where fees remain elevated, and that's when you grab cash at the ATM. Bankrate reports that those fees are at an all-time high, basically $4.73 every time you're going to pull cash out of an ATM. That's the average of what you're going to get charged in ATM fees. And I don't know about you. I don't remember the last time I used an ATM. Has it been a while for you?
I literally can't remember either.
Yeah, it feels like kind of a relic of a bygone era that most people don't need to use ATMs for anything. A lot of those cash payment apps like Venmo and stuff like that have made it easier to get around that as well, around not having cash. But if you like to grab cash at the ATM regularly, seeing that is kind of shocking. Just make sure you're using the right ATM when you're pulling cash out, because most banks have a network of free ATMs where you're not going to get charged a dime for taking your own money out, right? Like Capital One, for instance. I've been with Capital One for a long, long time. They use Allpoint ATMs. And so they have something like, they have tens of thousands of ATMs around the country at like every Target, Walgreens, and CVS. And so that way, if I did need cash, I wouldn't know where to go, and I wouldn't be charged some ridiculous fee, because I'm with a bank that has a network effect, right? Mm-hmm. They're giving me the discount for using
like
the
multiple
right
networks. I think that's one of the reasons Capital One has so many stinking options, is because like they're on multiple networks. And so if that is something that is important to you, the ability to get your hands on some cash,
yeah,
make sure you're with a bank that has a vast network like that.
Or I think Schwab is one of the banks that says, hey, guess what? We don't care where you get your cash. We'll just reimburse all those fees.
Yeah.
And so that's one of the biggest perks that Schwab offers as a bank.
Going with Chuck.
Yeah.
Or I'm not opposed to just use your check card. I mean, we're huge proponents of using your credit card because of the different benefits and the protections that they allow. But if you want to use your card once to be able to get some cash back for free at a supermarket, at
when
a
you
gas
buy,
station.
Buy the gum and get the 20 bucks
sure,
back.
Sure, like in high school where you're like getting a Mountain Dew in order to get your hands on 50 bucks. But that's obviously a consideration as well. Let's talk about how long your old phone is good for. Turns out it's going to be longer than you think. A friend of mine, he got a new to him old iPhone 8, and he got it for free, and he was very excited about it initially, but then he was bummed once Apple started making all the new releases, and he found out that he wasn't going to get the new iOS, and I was like, dude, it's a free phone.
Yeah.
You do not need to be complaining about this. He was a little bummed, but what he needed to understand was that the new iOS update, it didn't necessarily make his phone a total brick. He's not going to get the latest features, but it will, in fact, still get security updates, which means if you're still happy with the phone, you can keep it. Actually, I think going back to iPhone, like the new iPhone SE as well as the iPhone 6, I think they're on like iOS 15. So you can have like a 10-year-old phone, and you know what? It can still be completely functional and completely safe.
Yeah, I think a lot of people hear, oh, my version, I think the iPhone X is not receiving the update to the newest iOS either. And people think it's time to scrap it. If I'm not getting the new iOS, then I need to get rid of my phone. Let's be honest, the iOS upgrades are pretty minimal too.
Sure.
And so as long as the current iOS, which serves your phone, even if it's the older version, is still being updated, which they are, 15 and 16, your phone is still fine. It's still safe.
Yeah, absolutely. And so Google, they've actually just announced that they're going to provide 7 years of updates for their newest Pixel phones. So this is all great news. And like you said, there aren't massive technological leaps that are taking place with each new phone and each iOS that's being released. But as long as it's being protected, as long as you are receiving those security updates, what that means is that we can keep those phones around for longer. And it's just an example of the fact that it's not planned obsolescence that's causing us to have to go out and purchase a new phone. It's more of our own appetites. It's our own desires to have the latest and greatest thing. I feel like planned obsolescence is going to get the blame. They're going to take the fall for a lot of the stuff, when in reality, it's like, hey, no. You need to take responsibility. You need to own up to the fact that you just want the new phone.
It's easy to either be misinformed or to use it as an excuse.
As a crutch.
Yeah. To be like, oh, it's not going to get the latest. It's time for me to move on, when that's not necessarily the case. And it's good to see. I was glad to see Google say that, because Google had been kind of the one holdout in some ways of committing to longevity of these phones and saying, hey, 7 years, that feels like a robust amount of time that you can plan on keeping that phone. And who knows what phones are going to look like in 7 years, or whether we're even going to be using phones.
Maybe it's going to be all Neuralink.
The Neuralink implant,
chipping our brains.
That might be true, and it's also a little frightening. But speaking of phones, there's this new Gallup poll, and it found that the average teen spends almost 5 hours a day on social media.
Ooh.
And I don't want to embellish too much. It's 4.8 to be exact. But social media and YouTube are the main culprits, TikTok and YouTube in particular, where they're spending the bulk of that time. And the data points to parental involvement being key in screen time reduction. Basically, if you don't think it's healthy for your child to be tethered to that screen as much as they are, it's up to you to implement reasonable restrictions. And there's nothing wrong with using digital tools. It's just about using them in the way that they're meant to be, that allow us to continue a healthy relationship to those digital screens that we've become so accustomed to. But clear connections have obviously been made between heavy phone and social media usage and declining mental health. And so it's not just our kiddos who need to ditch the phone more either, man. I see that stat and I'm like, 4.8, that's insane. But then I look at myself, I have to be a little honest, and I have to realize that I need to make adjustments in my own life.
Do you use screen time on the
iPhone? I should.
You are a new convert to the iPhone space, and I'm sure they have it on Google, on the Droid software.
They have something
as well.
Yeah.
But it's not something I've done, and I'm actually, I want to implement that, but I'm honestly a little nervous because I'm afraid of what I'm gonna discover, which is probably all the more reason to actually implement it, just to keep tabs on my social media and just phone usage in general.
Yeah, so I mean that's a scary stat to see. It's clearly leading to other societal problems and other personal individual problems. And even as non-digital natives, Matt, you and I were grandpa millennials essentially. We didn't grow up with smartphones. We still remember flip phones. We remember pagers. We remember dial-up internet, all that kind of stuff. Yeah, those were the good old days. But it's a good reminder to I think to all of us, and to me as well, reading that I need to make some changes too, and I need to get off the screen more, get out there in nature, get out there with real friends.
Yeah, just think of all the other things that you could do if all of our time, I don't want to say all of our time, but a significant portion of our time was getting just sucked and drained, siphoned away from us.
And to me, this is one other great argument for kids being able to work jobs when they're in high school, because if you're like, wait a second, how much are you on the phone doing social media? All right, you can definitely work 2 hours.
That's a part-time job, bro.
I know. You could work 2 hours a day, whatever, 8 hours a week, something like that, after school. You can fit it in.
You sound like a fast food manager. Yeah. If you're leaning, you can be cleaning.
That was definitely what my Chick-fil-A manager told me back in the day. If you got time to lean,
you got time to clean. Yep. It's okay. Let's just say that that's a high bar to set. Like, if you're spending that much time on social media, you should go out there and get a job. Even just... let's drop the media part from social media. Let's just focus on the social part of things, right? The ability for kids just to play with one another, to actually interact in real life, to run around a neighborhood, to play sports, just all of the things that I think are highly underrated when it comes to childhood development. And I think a part of that is because it's not quantifiable. It's not something that you can put a finger... with a part-time job, it's less about the money and more about the lessons you learn. But you can still put your finger on an income, like a dollar amount, like, oh, this is how much I make. I think there's an inherent challenge when it comes to valuing something like kids being kids. I think it's going to lead to just a happier and healthier generation if these are things that we can lean into.
Well, especially when we talk about the problem of bullying, and bullying's a problem in the school, but if you can be constantly tethered to it now at home, getting bullied by the same people,
you can't get away from it.
You used to be able to get a break,
Yeah.
So all good reasons to put the phone down a little bit more and to encourage your kids to do the same.
All right. All right. Social soapbox over.
That's going to do it for this episode of How to Money. We appreciate you as always joining us. You can find show notes and links to some of the articles that we referenced on today's show up on the website at howtomoney.com.
That's right, man. So until next time.
Best friends out.
Best friends out.
Upswell Marketing would like to remind you that when customers choose your small business, they're really choosing you. So focus on super serving your existing customers and let Upswell handle the pipeline generation of new leads and customers.
Upswell specializes in developing customized direct response campaigns and is now offering a no-obligation free assessment of your current marketing strategies.
Not to mention, new customers also receive 15% off their first order when they mention that they heard about Upswell on this podcast. For more information, visit upswellmarketing.com. That's upswellmarketing.com.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Supercharge your work decks with AI-powered Canva presentations. All you do is start with a prompt. You describe your presentation in a few words, and Canva presentations will generate captivating slides that you can then customize in seconds.
Canva presentations are designed for every workplace and every department. Whether you work in sales, marketing, HR, ops, and more, Canva presentations can generate any deck you want for work. Sales decks, marketing presentations, onboarding plans, you name it. Any department can save time on any presentation with AI.
Generate slides in seconds with Canva presentations at canva.com. Designed for work.